Michigan HockeyCast 3.10, where if you stick around long enough, you'll get to hear about Alex's trip to Bowling Green. Are we going to open with Matt Stafford finally potentially leaving the Lions, or how Mikko Rantanen and Nathan MacKinnon can't get any help in the offensive end for the Colorado Avalanche?
I think the people want to hear, especially because the Super Bowl is coming up, people are in football moods right now.
And that bodes well because we're a football podcast or because we're talking about hockey?
We should do an NFL podcast. Just
we could do an NFL
shooting
podcast.
From the hip. Seeing what happens.
Just is that what we should call it? Shooting from the hip with Alex and Dave? Do you think people would listen to that?
I will say it was because the Stafford trade news came out a little bit before the, you know, 2 week shutdown news. I mean, that like 3 hour block on Saturday night was just a whirlwind.
Was it right after the game or is it right before the game? I can't remember.
What game?
Oh, that's right. We played on Friday.
Yeah, we played Saturday.
So we needed something to talk about on Saturday anyway.
Yeah.
Wow. It's been a while since these games.
It was like by far the biggest week of Lions news in a while because they officially rolled out GM, coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, several executives in the front office, and oh yeah, the franchise player is being traded.
Do you want to do a word-for-word reenactment of the opening press conference for Coach Campbell?
My mom loves it. She...
Did she also love Brady Hoke's This Is Michigan? It felt very This Is Michigan.
I don't think she ever saw that press conference.
Okay.
She said it gave her Bad Boys Pistons vibes, which in my house is keyword for good every time.
Is that what you guys reference? Like when you're playing Monopoly and you land on Park Place or in Boardwalk, you're like, I'm getting some Bad Boys Pistons rolls here. That's phenomenal. So you obviously have a take, and I know you want to tell me.
I mean, it's the right thing. It's right.
To trade him?
It's like you're in a relationship and you don't want to break up and you want to be the one to do it and then they do it for you, right? Like, that's the great part of what's going on here because Brad Holmes now is the new GM. Doesn't have to be the one that traded Matthew Stafford because Matthew Stafford now is trading himself, right? You didn't have to be the one now that made the... It's the right thing to do. But it was going to anger a lot of the fan base if you just pulled it off as this is what we're doing, as opposed to Stafford respectfully saying, you know, I'm 33 years old and I want
to make the playoffs again in my life.
Now,
what if he goes to Green Bay?
That won't happen.
If Green Bay gets it, like, lets Aaron Rodgers go or Rodgers walks away.
Yesterday was phenomenal. The Packers losing on several marginal calls is just the greatest karma of all time.
And Brady is in another Super Bowl?
I didn't want Brady to be in another Super Bowl, but I am glad he just gave us the
Are you more of a fan now because he knocked out the Packers?
I am happy for the sole reason that he gave us the Aaron Rodgers has won the NFC as many times as Tom Brady's stat. Because that...
That is a great stat.
The only thing that disappointed me about that game was Fox didn't give us a single camera shot of Aaron Rodgers' face as his last great shot at the Super Bowl drains away painfully and cruelly.
Speaking of Super Bowls, do you know the last time that Patrick Mahomes was beaten by more than one score?
No.
It was 2016 against the Iowa State Cyclones.
Well, there you go.
Isn't that crazy?
Did you see the thing about he predicted the Eagles over the Patriots in 2005?
It was no.
It was
in 2005 or 2018?
2005. It was a clipping from a newspaper someone found, and it was like local residents predict the Super Bowl. And
one of them is
in his hometown, and it was just like Patrick, 9 years old. And it just said, Eagles 35, Patriots 28. The Eagles have a better team.
That's actually pretty good. So can we talk about the Avs?
If you want. I haven't seen a lot of their games, so...
They have a good first line. They have maybe the best first line in hockey.
I was watching former Michigan Wolverine Quinn Hughes get battered this past week.
Do you know how many goals Vancouver's giving up?
Vancouver is bad.
They're giving up almost five goals a game.
Yeah, they're real bad.
That's insane. The Avs actually just traded for, okay, now I'm bringing this back, just traded for a former Michigan player. Do you know who it is? This was probably
Phil
before.
Phil DiGiuseppe.
Would anyone trade for Phil DiGiuseppe? Greg Patterson.
Yeah, that doesn't. I mean, I didn't know he was a Michigan guy.
Yeah, he was here. He's kind of a big guy. They traded Ian Cole for cap relief.
Oh, I did see that.
But Kadri has been terrible this year, and Saad's been terrible, and they've lost about two games they could have won or should have won, including also the West is like stacked with goalies. I didn't realize like how good everyone's goalie is in the West. Gibson and Quick, Binnington. Although I was talking to a hockey friend of mine, and he's like, Binnington's overrated. It's all the St. Louis defense.
You can find takes that every goalie is overrated, except Dominic Hasek.
Are all goalies overrated?
I mean, it's so hard to quantify. It's so hard to scout a goalie. It comes from year to year. And it's like with the Selke. Once you get a reputation, the reputation stays with you. And then you get those quotes that are like from scouts. It's like, when you look at Carey Price, you just know he was made to stop pucks and things like
that.
And that becomes...
Is he large?
It's like... You know, it's the Moneyball scene, right? Like, yeah. Ugly girlfriend means no confidence. Like, it just becomes mystique about goalies because it's so hard to assess.
Did you ever play goalie in anything?
In street hockey.
Were you shut down?
But the neighbor children now are too big and will take shots that are not adequate for the amount of padding that our garage offers in our old set of goalie pads. So.
Oh, man, that's great. That's a good story.
I'm not terribly flexible, but I have a pretty quick glove, and, you know, I could do the
main... Did you play third base growing up then, too?
My baseball career was kind of short.
Short-lived baseball career. Okay. But your analytics career is not, apparently, or your scouting career is just getting started.
Also, shout out to Bailey for becoming a scout.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think she, like, only got into hockey the last few years, and it shows you what you can do when you, like, really work hard, and she's covering the team even though she's not even here.
Yeah,
which is cool. Although this year, I guess you don't really have to be anywhere to cover things. But speaking of covering things, maybe we should cover the games that happened apparently longer ago than I can remember, because I thought we played on Saturday. But alas, so Thursday night, and we saw this game together. This was a game that we built. What did we build up this series as? Judgment Day.
Yeah.
And I think the ending, the parting shot on our podcast was, let's see if Michigan passes Judgment Day. Well, I would say that they did. And I would say they did with flying colors.
It was a really solid weekend. They played a team that had just come off beating Minnesota, a team that has the capability to beat anybody and can make you play icky games. And Michigan made Notre Dame play Michigan's game. And it really did not resemble the series in November at all. It was a really complete performance, and there's really nothing you can be angry about.
The weird thing is we kind of came into this series, and when we were previewing it, talking about how, you know, Notre Dame kind of wants to play icky, cloggy games, but their, like, stats don't necessarily say that. Like, their special team stats are not great, so they're going to be reliant on their 5-on-5, and their Corsi is very, very close to Michigan's, which is high, and it has been since Mel has been here. So when, like, there were times throughout the weekend where you were like, wow, both teams want to be skating, and if a team wants to skate with Michigan, probably, unless it's Minnesota, I'm sitting there saying, well, bring it on. We can skate with anyone.
Sure. It was definitely more open and free-flowing, but part of that was just the fact that, you know, Michigan was able to score first in both games. And we talked
true.
About that as keys to the game. So they converted on that, and then were able to kind of dictate it from then on out.
So the first period of game one was, I thought, slightly in Notre Dame's favor. They had a few more chances. Michigan kept pace for the most part.
But Michigan was getting better chances than they got, like, at all in November.
That's true. Even in the first period, yeah.
That was what made me feel all right even then.
Yeah. And then it wasn't too long into the second period where Power took a shot from straight away, and Bordalo, in his patented spot right in front of the net, tipped one and redirected it for a goal.
Which was initially credited to someone else. Don't remember who it was.
That one was?
Yes. And then they got it right eventually. But we knew it was Bordalo all along.
Yeah.
We saw that at the time, but it took them a little bit. I think they just gave it to Power at first, and then
okay.
And then they corrected it to
Bordalo. Yeah, it clearly changed direction. Yeah. But that was another good sign of seeing Power get involved in the offense. We've seen that a little bit more, and he continued his, I guess, points in game in the second period, I should say, when Michigan does get a power play, and this is something that we were kind of looking forward to because their power play has been going pretty well in the second half, at least. And this, he kind of brings the puck into the zone and I guess just almost falls over himself, I guess. And
about like one or two times per game, he just kind of, I don't know, the coordination isn't quite there, and he just like trips over himself and the puck kind of goes flying, which was a penalty. I mean, he took a couple of penalties early in the year on things like that where it was going to be a breakaway because he coughed it up right to the guy. And it's like, again, it's not like a bad pass or something. He just...
Like the game is still slowing down for
the
him.
The brain is not communicating with the feet or something like that.
Yeah.
And so he skates down to the circle and then kind of just gets discombobulated. And then it ends up being really fortunate because it ends up right where Beniers is. And he's able to take it to the net and then able to get the rebound put in.
Yeah, I think that was Philip LaPointe for his first goal as a Michigan Wolverine. And he's, like, we've talked about how he's been on the power play more, and we've kind of been going back and forth about if is that the right spot for him. It looks like he's fitting in nicely, gets kind of a garbage goal there. Michigan's up 2-0, and I'm feeling pretty good at that point. And then a little bit later, actually before we get to that next goal, I have a note here, is I think the only real chance that Notre Dame had in that game until really late was LaPointe also had the puck out near the blue line, and his stick broke.
Yep.
And then... So you have a pending breakaway. So LaPointe then does something I don't know if I've ever seen, where he starts skating to the bench because he's going to either come off and let somebody on or get another stick, because a lot of times they like hand sticks over the boards to you. And then he gets about half to two-thirds of the way there and decides, no, I better get back in the play. So then he skates back into the play and overskates the play and goes all the way to the other side. So you still have this breakaway that Eric Portillo saves. We didn't mention that Eric Portillo started. This is the second week in a row that now they've started him, and he looked pretty good, including, and this was probably his crown jewel of the night, was saving this breakaway.
Yes, and he stopped that with a poke check, right?
Yes, he came out and reached out with... So apparently, dude just loves to use a stick and no matter what he does.
Well, it's a very useful tool when you have long arms. So.
as Owen Power knows. So that's a big play there, other because it could be 2-1, and it could be Notre Dame would be right back in the game, and then we get the patented, now what's becoming patented, Cam York goal, where he, as you, I think we both sort of referenced, hused his way into the zone where he brings it up from his own end, from deep in his own zone, comes skating down one side, wraps all the way around, and is sort of fading out, but gets the stick in pretty good shooting position and fires a shot that, well, I don't know, there's like three guys in the net at that point.
There ended up being a lot of players right in the crease. Some people ended up in the net, and the referee called it as a goal on the ice and was very...
And we couldn't see it.
And he was all over it.
Yeah. I mean, he was actually in the right position. I mean, he could not have been in a better position to see.
He was calling that a goal right there. And then they went to the replay. The first few angles were terrible. We finally got one angle that kind of showed something, but you couldn't really tell anything there. And so you had no choice but to say call on the ice stand.
Well, they showed one angle where... So what happens is Notre Dame's wearing their all dark... They're wearing dark blue, I believe.
Yeah.
And the puck is shot, which is obviously black, is shot like into the dark blue part of the uniform for Notre Dame. So you have the guy that's like in the net, just across the line. There's like two people in it, and then the puck comes shooting back out. And from one angle, because we were sitting here, and you were like, oh, that's definitely in, because you could see it deflect off the guy who's in the net and come flying back out.
It sure looked like a goal, but at the end of the day, the call on the ice was going to stand.
There's no way you're overturning that. This is all still in the second period, and then... They tally a fourth later on, which this was, I believe, their only odd man rush of the night. I think they had a 3-on-2. A very nice play by Morgan to enter the zone. Gets the puck to Beniers. Beniers dumps it to KJ, who's near the net. And St. Cyr tries to lay on his back to make the save.
So
it's just lifted over him.
Two things here. Number one, it's just a very poor effort for the Notre Dame defense.
Yeah,
it's something you don't see a lot where... the guy that's closest to where the puck's coming in the zone plays to kind of cut the pass off and doesn't cut it off at all and just flails and totally takes himself out of the play. And that, you know, that's just very, very bad. And then St. Cyr's solution to stopping it is to do the Hasek roll, which is where rather than sliding laterally on your knees, you lay down and roll your back over and then try to just flail your limbs out and stop the puck, which for Dominik Hasek worked really well and was his signature move was the Hasek roll where you roll across. And then yeah. Sometimes he would even do it where he lifts the legs up and he's like right. Laying, you know, like at a right angle in the net to stop it. And, you know, it was crazy and it worked for him, but it's not conventional tactics, number one.
No.
And number two, it's only so successful when you are a goalie of St. Cyr's size. And you only take up so much of the net already. You take up less of it when you're Hasek rolling. I mean, your arms aren't very long.
You're already cutting yourself in half.
On your back.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know what that... I mean, it was trying to pull off the highlight reel save of the season. And
in a 3-0 game, yeah. That you don't need a highlight save. You just need to find a way to make this more difficult than it is. And KJ just finishes over the top of him. And it was, I mean, it was 4-0 at that point. And I mean, it was kind of a very uncharacteristic game from Notre Dame. Like, we don't see that a whole lot from Michigan. When the times that Michigan beats them, it's usually sometimes they'll get like an empty netter or they'll get a third goal, but usually they find a way to get a power play goal, maybe sneak one in. But this was the second period was Michigan playing well for sure, but it was also Notre Dame looking terribly kind of on defense,
and
like
they
you
just,
said.
They had a rough game.
Yeah. The other part of that we should talk about a little bit is it looks like Morgan is supplanting himself on that line instead of Jack Becker. They play Becker a little bit, but Morgan has actually been making some plays and does a little better job, I think, skating with those two.
Morgan's faster than Becker, so he can kind of keep up with their speed, even though Kent Johnson's not very fast. I mean, I don't know what his top speed is, but he doesn't play super fast. I mean, his game is predicated more on the passing and the high skill with his hands and that kind of thing. He's not really a burner in the way he plays. Beniers is, but Johnson normally sort of trails behind and looks to set things up. So, you know, Morgan's got the speed, can make some things happen as a result of that, and, you know, struggles finishing, which take of that what you
we've
want,
noted a few times
on the, you know, on this line where you get grade A chances. I don't know who the right person is here, but Morgan's looked okay so far, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, and I think that's why they had Becker on the line, was because he's kind of a big body in front of the net who's going to get rebounds and easy chances when they can get him the puck there. So it made sense.
You think that LaPointe could be a guy in that vein to do that, or Granowitz too. I mean,
yeah, Grant. I mean, they've moved Granowitz around. He's been on a few different lines, I think, this year.
He's mostly been with Becker, but
Becker?
Oh, sorry, Beecher.
Beecher, yeah,
on the top line.
So, I guess, yeah. So they it's 4-0 going into the third, and it's all but moot at that point. I think
that game's
like
over.
It's done.
I mean, it was going to take a miracle on Manchester or something like that to make this happen. So.
Yeah, and so Michigan ends up getting another goal on a Kent Johnson redirect.
Yep.
And then Portillo does get his shutout spoiled late where
it's like with 5 minutes left.
Yeah, there's a few minutes left, and Michigan's just kind of playing out the game, and Notre Dame gets the puck deep. They don't get it out a couple of times, and then you get an open shooter kind of across the house, and guy picks a corner, and I mean, it's not really on Portillo. It's just maybe you could call it some sloppy defense for sure, but it's also 5-0, and you're just trying to not get hurt and get on to the next game, I think, for the most part.
I mean, I don't remember that goal at all.
I mean, did you have one of those Men in Black, like, flashers?
At that point, you just kind of, you're just playing the game out. And
Michigan's had a few of those on the first weekend a little bit. Like, they had one against Michigan State now, the 9-0 game, and then they had, the game got away. That was the second game
against
Ohio State.
Yeah.
And then another one against Notre Dame. And you know, these aren't the best teams in the league, obviously.
Notre Dame's pretty good.
Notre Dame's all right. But when you're talking about, like, scoring
teams, I mean,
they're
a clear cut above MSU and OSU if we're just talking categorically.
Sure. But they don't score well. And that was evident pretty much all game. And we will see what they did in Game 2 in a minute.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Game 2 on Friday? Friday night.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we record on weird days, so we never know what day of the calendar it is, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know. We discussed this a few weeks ago, or a couple months ago. Anyway, so Game 2 was, this was a Thursday-Friday series. Game 2 was Friday, and it was definitely different than the Thursday game?
Maybe.
No?
I mean,
I thought Notre Dame played a lot better.
It was the same open style game. Notre Dame played better, yes, but it wasn't. This was not the November series. I mean, it wasn't.
It started really well because, of, like, 2 minutes into the game or a few minutes into the game, Mike Pasta takes a shot that hits Jeremy Hellickson in both legs or a skate in a leg or something, and like floops around up and over St. Cyr, who's sliding from his right to his left to make the save, and the puck just like harmlessly goes into the other side. And it was like, oh, hey, like that's pretty nice. I mean, that's the kind of goal that you're expecting to need against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Like normally. So when that went in, I was feeling like, oh, it's going to be like that.
It was definitely a good omen, we'll say that.
Yeah. But a few minutes after that, Notre Dame appears to tie the game on, I believe it was a 3-on-2, I think, and the fourth guy in scooped up a little bit of a rebound that off of Mann saved and flipped it over Mann. But there's a reason that he had to flip it over Mann is because he was laying down, because Nick Blankenberg came back and was rushing back and stopped, and Lindsdell, I believe, like cross-checked him into Mann, who was in the crease, and they all went kind of flying into the net and the bar, the crossbar and everything, so there was just like a bunch of bodies strewn about the crease.
Yeah, so, you know, I used to have a pocket copy of the MLB rule book. And
the MLB rule book?
Yeah, but I've never had a pocket copy of the NCAA rule book, so I wasn't sure the exact rules of goaltender interference.
Yeah, I was wondering that,
because,
too.
Let's be clear here, the NBCSN crew, which, by the way, side topic, NBCSN's about to go away.
Yeah, I was really bummed about that.
Being discontinued at the end of the year.
They have some good stuff.
Enjoy it. You like those World Series of Poker reruns. And
oh, no. I just usually watch EPL and NHL hockey.
Yeah, Formula One.
I don't watch a lot of Formula
One. Do you remember when it was
ONE? OLN? Yes. Do you remember when it was Versus?
Well, yeah, it was Versus. It had the NHL.
It went from ONE to Versus.
Anyway, back to NBCSN.
Their crew.
Their crew was talking only about whether the Notre Dame player made contact with Strauss Mann, which he didn't.
No.
Lindsdell didn't touch Strauss Mann.
He wasn't close to him.
He touched Nick Blankenberg, who touched Strauss Mann.
He used him as a pendulum.
And so my reaction was, well, if it says in the rule book that he has to make direct contact with the goalie, then he didn't.
That's
but
true.
But if there's any other way to look at it, this is about as clear-cut as it comes.
But it's kind of like a guy getting blocked.
But they didn't even
return.
Acknowledge that he had knocked Blankenberg, and then eventually after like replay 17, we're now sitting there and they're like, well, it does seem like Lansdell pushed Blankenberg into Mann. And it's just like,
this wasn't that hard to originally see if you want to see it.
And so then they come out of the replay booth and then they made the right call. So,
and were you expecting them to make the right call?
I don't know what to expect.
Review roulette.
Yeah, I wonder if the referees would rather have a booth, you know, like a real, what the NFL used to have, right?
Where like where they go under a hood?
Where you disappear into the, you know, mall photo booth type curtain situation.
And have like a snack and then come out a minute later.
Because we can see them in there.
I like it because sometimes you can see the screen that they're looking at. Like you, yeah, like you referenced last week. Yeah, last week.
They made the right call, at least.
Yeah, so that gets taken off the board, and you're feeling slightly fortunate. But then, I think that was the end of the first. Yeah, so did it end 1-1 or was it 1-0 at the end of the first? I can't remember. But Notre Dame ends up tying the game on not exactly like the way that Mike Pasta scored, but there's like a shot that is then tipped.
Yep.
And I said it was pretty lucky. I know the guy got a good stick tip on it, but if you watch like the replay, it goes through like a forest of legs. Like it could have hit anyone's leg or skate, but it like meanders through about three or four legs, and man is like sliding from his right to his left, and it just goes in the short side, and it's 1-1. So I was like, well, okay. I mean, this is pretty even, right? Like Michigan gets kind of a fluky goal,
but they were playing the game Michigan wanted to play,
like the style.
Yeah, and that's what I felt good about was that, you know, they're. Even into the third period when it was still 1-1, I was pretty adamant someone was going to score because the game was open, it was free-flowing, and there were real chances.
Yeah, and the interesting thing that kind of appeared in the second period here is that Mann was not sort of his normal super sharp on top of everything self. Now,
I mean, I think you were a little harsher on him than I was. He had one particular incident playing the puck behind the net, which comes to mind.
Right.
And it's not clear what he's trying to do there. He attempts to basically field a ground ball behind the net, which is a lot harder to do when you have, you know, the padding and all of that.
And it's not a ball, it's a puck.
Yeah, and so he's like hunched over trying to like scoop it off the ice with his glove. And when he could just be playing it with the stick, and it's just, what are you doing?
But I thought he was a little more loose with his rebound control, too. Like, that's the thing that we talked about Portillo needing to, that was like, his next level is controlling his rebounds and that sort of thing. And Mann has been pretty phenomenal at that for a while now. And I'm not, like, coming down on him or trying to say, like, oh, he's not any good anymore. He just had a game where normally you don't see this sort of thing out of him, and he kind of left a few. Like, even, for example, the wave-off goal that we just talked about, like, there's a shot there on that 3-on-2 that he leaves a rebound about 3 feet in front of him and doesn't have a chance to collect it before he's cleared out, obviously. But, like, those are things that you don't really generally see from him much at all.
But he also didn't give up any goals he shouldn't have, and he also came up on an A-plus save on the breakaway in the second period.
That is true. And that was the second thing, is you had, and that was sort of what, he was a little loose with some of his technical stuff, but in the end, as people on Twitter had commented to me a number of times, he made all the saves, which he did, and I never said that he didn't. I was just talking more about the second-by-second control of play, so to speak. And that was sort of his redemption, is that Michigan's defense, which has been very, very good for the first five games of the second half, was a little loose as well, and I believe Notre Dame had plural odd man rushes in that second period, and Mann made a number of saves, including, like you said, a breakaway.
The breakaway is the only one I'm going to get frustrated about, because that was a very unfortunate situation. You could see it coming a mile away.
Because it's Keaton Person making a rather ill-advised pass from the point in the offensive zone.
Well, so the thing about Keaton Pearson is that he's a pretty good defender in the sense of you coming in with the puck on your stick and he doesn't have it, right? He is not a guy that is just going to get turnstiled or blown by a lot or carved up. I mean, he's pretty good in those situations.
One-on-one.
Yeah, and even, you know, I mean, necessarily in team defense, when the part of the position that does not involve him touching the puck, he's quite good at.
Okay.
It has been the issues we have seen with him this year have been when he has to play it. And that's, you know, the unfortunate part is that the defensive position isn't just stopping the opponent from scoring. There's also the breakout component. And defensemen have to be able to make that first pass. And one thing that's critical to the position of defense is when you're making the first pass on the breakout, it's not often you have a ton of time. Right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you get the situation where the two teams are changing and you're standing back there for 10 seconds and you're surveying the situation. Yeah. But in a lot of the plays, right, the puck is loose, you get to it, it's in the corner, you've got, you know, a half second to scan the ice and boom, make a decision
yep.
of where it's going to go because the forecheckers are right there. And it just seems like his brain just freaks out when he has to make those decisions because we see a lot of times that hesitation and he just looks really shaky and doesn't, you know, it's kind of a deer in the headlights type thing.
Okay.
And right there, you know, he's in the offensive zone. He's looking around. He's trying to see where he's going to go with it and then just kind of panics and makes a pass that you just see is like, oh, no. And
you he's know, had a few of those,
the forecheckers right there. He's trying to make a really high degree difficulty pass. It ends up being very feeble, and it's just, you know, served right up on a golden platter. But, you know, man comes out, and he saves the day.
Yes. Yep. So they end up getting away with that. They get away with several other odd man rushes that weren't as egregious as that one. But and then right at the end of the period, you had just a Lambert turnover that was – just terrible behind his own net. The puck gets put out in front, and you have a wide-open shooter from, I don't know, 5 feet, 8 feet, somewhere in that range, and Mann makes another huge save. So, like I said, this was not Mann having a bad game. He was just a little sloppier in sort of the ancillary sense. Not in will he get in front of the puck, or can he make a save. It's.
But by the way, if we're talking about the defense in general, which we may more, I don't know, in depth in a minute, but you're never going to get a situation where you're not playing the way Michigan wants to play. You're just not going to have many games that you don't give up any odd man rushes
right.
and or any grade A chances, right? Like every team that wins a Stanley Cup has a goalie that even at that moment in their career is good enough to make grade A chances, you'll save grade A chances
yeah.
on a regular basis, because even great teams that have fortresses, you're going to make some mistakes. And
sure.
What you can expect is a good goalie to save a lot of those, and Mann continues to do so. So,
yeah, and you slacked me something really interesting during that period where you said this is a game where you want your number one starter in net.
I mean, it's a tie game. There's chances going both ways. This is where you want, you know, you need your goalie to make some stops, and Mann was able to do that for Michigan.
Yeah, and at least through the first two periods. And then into the third period, and it happened, I think, relatively early. But Michigan did take the lead on sort of a nice hold in the zone. And Jay Karinen, who, again, pops up as a guy who we – like, he had that bad play or two at the end of the second Michigan State game that they ended up blowing. But other than that, like, pretty much all year, because he's found his way in the lineup, whether it be because York is gone at – the World Juniors, or Summers is hurt, or Summers is sitting, or anything else, when he's stepped into play, he's been fine, and he found himself in a good position here, took a shot from straight away, and scored the goal. And it looked like they credited Granowitz, I believe, and we were kind of going back and forth about it, but...
Did they give it to Granowitz? I thought they gave it to Karinen.
Well, they originally gave it to Granowitz, and then on... when you looked at it again, you could see that it hit St. Cyr's stick.
Yeah.
It hit off the knob of his stick and went in the net. And when that happened, I was like, oh man, we might get a sweep here. Like, I was relatively confident. And then again, a DM from my good buddy Alex, who's like, uh-oh, Michigan State, deja vu. And I was like, oh no.
It was almost identical. You take the lead with 5 minutes to go or 6 minutes to go in this case, and here you go.
Yeah.
Can you do it?
Which is good, because that's what they need. Like, the Michigan's getting, like, chances to right a bunch of wrongs that they had. And instead of sitting back and building their fortress and hoping that they can protect, they kept attacking. And you got a great drive to the net by Nolan Moyle, who creates a great opportunity off of a rebound for Brendan Brisson, who's in the right place at the right time. This is another guy who we were a little skeptical in the first half of the season. This is a first-round pick, and he has a good shot. We can see that, and he can play with other guys when the talent around him is really high. But what is he really bringing outstanding? And he's found ways to get near the net and get, like, some goals now. Like, he was the guy that got the goal that gave him that lead in that state game. He gets to the front of the net and puts this one away off of a good Moyle chance. And that's kind of been a nice step up for him. He's not taking as many penalties, like minor penalties that we had mentioned a number of times throughout the fall. And he steps in and just slams the door on this game.
And Moyle has a penchant for doing things in big moments, it feels like. I mean, he scored some goals against Ohio State over the past two, three seasons, you know, in big situations. And he just proves to be useful in those moments.
Yep. No, and this was, we didn't mention this, but this was a series without Garrett Van Wy, who is essentially Moyle's running mate. They've been on the same line for 2.5 years now.
But we saw Lambert on the line, which I'm
Lambert
wondering if that might stay.
I mean, I think that if Van Wy's healthy, he's going to play. Do you, or was he hurt, or was he sat because of...
I don't know.
I didn't hear any of that.
I didn't hear either, but I wouldn't be... I mean, Mel likes Lambert a lot, and if you can get away defensively with Lambert there, it's probably a boon offensively.
But couldn't you put Lambert on the wing?
Well, then are you scratching Moyle?
I mean, no, you have...
You're scratching the point? Granowitz? I mean...
I guess. I don't know. It seems for me to hard... It seems hard for me to see them... I mean, unless there's a reason that I didn't hear about with Van Wy, he seemed to be their a good third line to fourth line center for this team since he's been here. And I don't know. We'll see. It'll be an interesting situation going forward, for sure. And then finally, at the very end of the game, Michigan gets a power play.
Yeah, they go
the entire game. There weren't penalties throughout this game. I think Notre Dame had one in the third period. Beecher got a boarding call, which you said was sort of unlucky.
Yeah, it was bad luck. I mean, it was a penalty, but he ends up hitting a guy from behind where the guy is, he's going to hit the guy and he's turned sideways. And then right when Beecher goes to hit him, then he turns his back to him and then ends up crunching him into the boards, which is just...
But if he doesn't, then it's not a boarding call.
Yeah, because it's just a standard...
Just check.
Hip check, right? It's just
so is that a savvy move?
It's just the same in football. Maybe, I don't know if it was intentional or not. I mean, okay. The game moves so fast, right? I mean, it's like in football, if you go to tackle someone and then, you know, they lower their head and then you end up hitting them in the head and you weren't intending to, right? It's just like...
Grab their face mask or something.
Yeah, it's tough luck.
Okay. So Michigan finally gets one there and...
And that closed the door on the game. I mean, it was more or less closed when...
Moyle or Brisson scored.
But yeah.
So that's a pretty good weekend. Like... It's been a pretty good half. They've basically played 3 minutes of some shoddy defensive play in like the second game of a series 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago. But other than that, I mean, it's tough to really find a whole lot that you've been unhappy about basically in the entire second half.
I mean, we're Indiana Jones trying to emerge from the lair, and we think we've gotten through the last trap, but we don't really know yet, right? Like, it's like, well, the defense is fixed now, right? Maybe.
Well,
and we'll see.
And the caveat is...
Are we through the weeds, right? We don't really know, but we are cautiously optimistic at this point. We don't think there's another scythe ready to come out of the wall to impale us, but maybe there will.
And we were going to find out about Penn State. That'll probably have to be...
Well, it was going to be next week anyway, so...
Yeah, rescheduled or...
There is a two-week pause, probably 2 weeks, maybe more, maybe less, who knows? Yeah. We're not in the athletic department or I don't know. So we'll see what happens. But we can't tell you what will happen. But if there was one point to have a 2 week pause mandated, this would be the time to do it because they were already on a 10-day pause.
Right.
So they would only miss this 2-game series and you could probably cram it in some other time. Which, by the way, the NCAA should just move the basketballs and hockey tournaments back. Just a few weeks. Give the conferences more time.
Yeah.
I don't understand this. Like, okay, Penn State basketball, now you've got to play 8 games in 16 days because we have to meet this arbitrary date that we set, even though we are, you know, the TV powerhouse of sports. Like, it's like, okay, we can't hold the Super Bowl on one day. If the Super Bowl's in May, no one will watch. You know, if we put the NCAA basketball tournament in June, no one will watch. Like, no, come on. You know, we don't have to do it that day. And so I think I would hope the NCAA just moves everything. Give the
for one team though?
Not for one team. I mean, you look at cross basketball, it's happening. Conferences are just screwed over constantly. And just move everything back a couple weeks and just give a little bit of buffer, right?
Let the conferences iron it out.
And then go from there.
So before we move on, we were going to talk about this Power 16 thing, which may or may not be replacing Pairwise.
Not referring to Owen Power's 16th birthday. But.
Which wasn't that long ago. But the two things I wanted to address are like Michigan special teams, because we talked about how good their power play has been all year and then how their penalty kill was not very good in the first half, and their numbers are still not good, but if you look at their most recent numbers, they are good. And the first thing is the penalty kill was one of the things that held them back in towards the end of the first half of the season. They have killed 14 of their last 16 penalties. And the two goals that they gave up were one, that really goofus offsides in the Ohio State game that had to be reviewed, that then couldn't be reviewed because they played the puck, and so then you had a tip in front of the net. And the other one was a goal later in that game when it was 4-1 and there was 10 seconds left and Michigan wasn't diving to block a shot ever in that situation. So those are the only two times that their penalty kill has been scored upon. And I don't even remember a whole lot of other great chances that they gave up.
So they've allowed 7 goals in 6 games.
Which is pretty good.
Yes. It's worth noting that the teams they've played are the 3 lowest scoring by goals for in the 7 teams in the conference.
Maybe in the nation.
No.
Probably not.
So it's not, you know, they're not shutting down an offensive powerhouse.
Right.
But we now, after Notre Dame, got to see them play a team in November and then saw them play them again in January.
Right.
And it appeared to me to pass the eye test.
And the other thing in that penalty kill is, like we've mentioned this a little bit last week, but they're very active. Like, it's not like they're killing a penalty and, you know, their goalie's making 10 saves and they're just guys are missing open nets. Like, it's tough for opponents to get good looks. They're not really giving up great chances in the house and especially in the slot. They're pretty much keeping guys to the perimeter. And like what you mentioned about, you know, traffic cones on skates, like you can't really pass through them as much. I mean, I think
no,
it was...
They've definitely tightened those screws up.
And that's part of the reason why I was talking about Van Wy is because I remember in one of the Ohio State games when they had penalties, he had like multiple deflections over the course of a game of just passing right through.
And they're also blocking a ton of shots. So.
Right, which is what they needed to do because Michigan was trending in a direction that was not going to be good for them because they were not going to be able to score enough to keep pace, especially once the competition got higher. And so they've really ratcheted up their level of defensive play. Again, not against the most high-powering offensive teams, but you have to start somewhere, and Michigan is putting up the numbers that you need to see them put up against a team against the quality of competition.
Yeah, pretty much.
And the power play, they're 5 of their last 18, which is pretty
about
good.
30%.
Yeah, and that's good for, you know, you can argue that it's the best in the nation because the only two teams that are above them have played like 8 and 9 games. And Michigan has now played, I think, 16 games.
Yeah.
So they've played twice as many games and still have, I think they're at 28 or 29% on the year, which is, I mean, it's not like the CCM line good, but it's still pretty good.
And yeah, I mean, it's a fine number.
Yeah. So the last thing that we wanted to get into tonight was, you know, we talk about the NCAA tournament, assuming there's an NCAA tournament, and, you know, the pairwise ranking is what everyone in college hockey has looked at since I've been following college hockey 15 years ago. You're either in or you're out, and the computer lets you know as soon as the game is over. That is still going on, but there is debate as to if that is going to be the metric used.
I mean, College Hockey News is more in the know than we are, and they, at the top of the Power 16, which is like their power rankings, pretty much just says like pairwise is junk. Don't pay attention to it.
Right. I wanted to read this because
they're not terribly ambiguous.
Right. So what their statement is the CHN Power 16 attempts to rank teams based on the eye test, in quotes, with some behind the scenes math thrown in as well, which is basically how the NCAA Ice Hockey Committee will choose the teams for the NCAA tournament this year. So they're basically coming out and telling you, there's going to be some sort of committee.
Yeah.
And College Hockey News is probably as good a place to go for college hockey stuff anywhere. I mean, that's what I've always used. I used to go to uscho.com. I haven't done that in a while since College Hockey News has propped itself up.
USCHO is a little sparse compared to CHN when it comes to just volume of coverage.
So right now in this Power 16, Michigan is number 5, which puts them as the highest 2 seed and on the fringes of a 1 seed, which is, I mean, okay, if you're just not looking at resumes and you're only looking at how good is this team, is Michigan a 1 seed? Sure. Sure. I think probably they're, especially if the defense and PK that we talked about have improved a little bit. If those improve, it's tough to find anything you don't like about this team.
What I'll say is this: if Michigan takes care of business against MSU, OSU, Penn State, let's say, and then even if they just split Wisconsin and Minnesota, mm-hmm. they're probably in.
Right, but we're not even talking about in. I mean, this thing has us as a borderline one seed. I mean, do you buy that?
We just need to see more games, and we need to see how the season goes as it goes along. Because a lot of conferences still haven't played a ton of games, and you know, when we get into mid-February, then I think we'll have a better sense.
Okay. Just for reference, some of the teams that are also in this top, we can go through the top eight in here. The ones and twos are Boston College, which has basically the entire U.S. World Juniors team.
So they got Newhook back from the World Juniors, but has only played one game on the season. They started kind of late. They have Matthew Boldy as well, who is a really good winger. Spencer Knight is considered a borderline generational goalie prospect, who has had a really good year for them as well. And then just a lot of other supplementary talent.
That's not surprising at BC. Yeah. That sounds like BC. Number two is Minnesota, who we've talked about a bunch of times.
Yep.
We've seen them. They're good in pretty much every phase. Even LaFontaine's having a great year. Nodak is number three. This is the Ottawa Senators junior team.
Yeah, more or less. They've got four or five Senators prospects on that team. Obviously a lot of talent, headlined by Jake Sanderson, the number five overall pick in the 2020 NHL draft, as well as Shane Pinto, Jacob Bernard Docker, Tyler Cleven, Kawaguchi, a few other guys. I mean, they're a really talented group, as North Dakota often is.
And these guys are, like, touted prospects. They're not just, like, throw-in guys.
I mean, they're not like Eric Cicchellini, you know, seventh-round picks or something.
Right.
But they're also, I mean, it's not, we shouldn't confuse them with what Michigan has.
I see.
A lot of those guys are second, third-round range. Sanderson's the only true blue chip.
Okay. And then at number four is our favorites, Minnesota State, who no one has ever heard of any of the players that ever play at Minnesota State, but they always have
like a plus 60 goal differential.
Yeah.
Because they just don't allow any goals.
They generally have good goaltending, play good defense.
They don't play very many good teams in
and then
the
they play
WCHA,
bad teams.
So
that
make of that what you will.
Yeah, but that usually translates into a one or a two seed pretty much every year. Michigan's at five. Here might be the shocker, is Bowling Green is at six.
I don't know anything about Bowling Green, so.
Did you ever have a meal at Bowling Green?
Yes.
How was it?
It was a big banquet of sorts. They were just very interested in hosting 44 12-year-olds at Bowling Green State University on our way back from Columbus in sixth grade. And we just got off the bus. They walked us into a big, like a banquet room, right, where like a team might have an end-of-year dinner or something in suits and that kind of thing. I mean, it was a nice room, and we walked in, and they served us sandwiches, and we ate, and then we got back on the bus. I don't know why we were there. I don't really remember what the point of that was, but that's my one trip to Bowling Green.
See, you started following college hockey after the Big Ten became a thing, right?
I mean, yeah.
So previously to that, it was a CCHA, and Michigan would go down there every year. So I've been down there for games four or five times. And, I mean, it's like a really small hockey arena. Like, it's fine, but, like, it's kind of one of those intimate venues where there's really not a lot of people. They have a big student section. They've never really been that good for the most part. So to find them up at number six here, good for them. Maybe we'll see them in the tournament.
Bowling Green's, like, right before Findlay, right?
If you're going it's down like 75. An hour away. It's so easy to get to.
Yeah.
That's why we'd go there, because it's like, oh, Michigan's good this year. We want to take a couple road trips. Where are we going to go? Well, Bowling Green, you can go there on a Tuesday and be back before midnight.
Yeah.
So, and then seven is St. Cloud State. This is the program that Motzko built.
Yep.
And then left. And they've been...
Can we discuss how they ripped off the Montreal Canadiens? And it really bothers me. It's like the schools.
You mean with their logo?
Yeah, the schools that have the winged helmet. Like, stop. That's not your thing. Find something else.
When did they get that logo?
I don't know. Montreal Canadiens have had it for a long, long time. So
you think that they stole it from...
I'm very certain they stole it from the Montreal Canadiens. I would be very surprised if St. Cloud had that before the oldest hockey team in the NHL.
That's probably a safe assumption. So they're up there.
We don't know any of their players.
Another NCHC team... They were really good for years under Motzko. I think they've fallen off a
little
bit.
Yeah, but they never had a lot of talent. Like, they're not like Duluth, who's next on the list.
Yep, and then the last team that we're going to mention is Minnesota Duluth, who has had their own COVID issues, and they did, I think, decently well in their weird December tournament in the NCHC where everybody was playing a bunch of games.
Yeah, it was the bubble.
Yeah. And so they're the 8th seed. Most of those teams that we just went over are teams that you generally are going to find in the top 10, top 8.
Perennial contenders.
Yeah, it's nice to find Michigan back up there for the first time in 4 or 5 years, it seems like. But, it's weird because, like, the first few weeks of the season, is Michigan a top 5 team? Yeah. The next few weeks of the season, they're probably not a tournament team. And then you coming back from the break, they start to look good again. They're fixing their issues. But, you know, they haven't played anyone. And so all those series are coming up. We have Penn State. Well, we were going to have them in like a week. Now it's probably, I don't know what they're going to do
sometime after that.
Yeah. And then you have a Tuesday game against Michigan State. And then you have that big series against Wisconsin, I believe, at Yost this time. That's the series that could make or break their sort of Big Ten standings.
Yeah.
If they win that series, because when you look up and down the Big Ten standings themselves, Minnesota's still probably going to be the odds-on favorite to win it. And then you have Michigan and Wisconsin, maybe Notre Dame that have a shot at two, and then you kind of have the bottom three, right, of Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan State.
Yep.
Anything else? Any last quips?
Not really. Hopefully the team rests up and continues to not associate with Patient Zero from the UK, whoever that person is, and hopefully they can get back on the ice soon. Hockeycast 3.10. For Alex Drain and David Nasternak, come back next week where we'll talk about a variety of topics and celebrate birthdays.